Welcome back to See, Hear, Feel. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. H. Peter Sawyer. Dr. Peter Sawyer has over 30 years of experience in dermatology. He obtained his medical degree at the University of Graz. He has been the inaugural chair in dermatology at the University of Queensland since 2007, and he has also been the director of the Princess Alexandra Hospital Dermatology Department since 2008. His research areas include translational skin cancer research, and he is internationally recognized with particular expertise in dermoscopy as well as reflectance confocal microscopy. He has over 600 publications with an H index of 70 in Google Scholar, and he has been awarded numerous grants, including the Medical Research Future Fund Next Generation Clinical Researchers Program Practitioner Fellowship, the NHMRC Practitioner Fellowship, and the Australian Cancer Research Foundation, Australian Center of Excellence in Melanoma Imaging and Diagnosis. It's a lot of awards, a lot of grants, a lot of publications. Very honored to speak with you today. Thank you for being willing.
Yeah, thank you so much, Christine. It's really my pleasure to have a conversation with you. Absolutely.
Thank you. Would you be able to share a personal anecdote about yourself?
Yeah, people wouldn't think when they see me that I have done quite a few marathons, and even once I did an Ironman, the real one, that just was under the time of 17 hours, which is the finishing time. Still, I always make jokes that endurance and persistence is something which is quite relevant, not just in your personal life, but also particularly in research.
I think that's really true. Absolutely. Yeah, that's amazing. You've done a whole Ironman.
Yeah.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you about is your opinion on the overdiagnosis of skin cancer.
Thank you so much for asking this question. This question is actually very close to my heart. And we have a lot of internal discussions, but also research discussions around this, because in our Australian Center of Excellence in Imaging and Diagnosis, we have basically 15 3D total body systems as part of a 10 million grant from the Australian Cancer Research Foundation. And of course, with this kind of sophisticated, innovative imaging, the idea is, of course, to early diagnose melanoma. But then, of course, we also early detect all sorts of suspicious moles. And I'm obviously aware of the whole literature about it, the fantastic work from Adi Adewol on this topic, but also the fierce critic from dermatologists about his work. Overdiagnosis 100% is true, right? This yes. is no question to me. Overdiagnosis in skin cancer, particularly melanoma, this is a cause. Medicine in general, and particularly breast cancer and thyroid cancer, prostate cancer, they are quite exciting examples. Also, there is another component which I like to name overcalling. And this is the histopathologic overcalling. This is certainly something which is very difficult, because angst or fear plays a lot of role in this context for the patient, for the consumer, for the doctor, and of course also for the pathologist. And everyone is afraid about the underdiagnosis, right? Many clinicians quite correctly argue it is better to excise more lesions than to miss one. I'm part of the European Union grant. In a discussion, someone was speaking about unnecessary excisions, unnecessary biopsies, and getting very excited, very angry about this, because she was saying my husband would be still alive if he would have had an unnecessary excision. And this is really the problem here. How can you make sure that underdiagnosis doesn't occur? Having said this, from a public health perspective, overdiagnosis is a huge issue. Just recently, with colleagues from Australia, we did publish an article in the PGD, a perspectives article. Do we need to rethink the diagnosis of melanoma in situ and severely dysplastic nevus? I'm now paraphrasing what we wrote. You support the need for robust discussion in both clinical and pathology communities. We concluded that such a discussion could be facilitated through an international summit on the topic, which would inform the next step towards achieving change in policy and practice, particularly for pathology diagnosis. In Austria, I was working 20 years basically hardcore in dermatopathology. I'm a European board-certified dermatopathologist. I was one of the many fellows of the late Bernie Ackerman from New York University. I have written a book with him. Obviously, 90% was written from him, but I did a fair share of work, as you can imagine. So I understand the subjectivities in the pathology diagnosis. I'd like to tell you a joke. I like to say in my presentations, some pathologists are more malignant than others. It's not a very elegant statement, but I can tell you within the pathology community, we know who are the more malignant and who are the more benign, right?
Yes.
This has nothing to do how good they are. They are all extremely well trained, right?
Yes.
And they are all very sophisticated. What I have witnessed with Bernie, we had discussions for 1 hour if it was a spitznevus or a melanoma. Then they found a consensus on spitznevus. He was in half a minute writing the report. Next day, someone was saying, Bernie, can we discuss this case once more? And then we discussed it once more, and then the consensus was melanoma. And again, after a long discussion, Bernie was saying, okay, I agree, I think we have to change the report. And then he was dictating the report and the criteria for melanoma now.
Yeah.
Which tells you, Christine, how subjective this is.
Yes. That's something that I definitely struggle with, that what I see under the microscope, how I put different things together is subjective. Do you have any idea what we can do about that other than a robust discussion?
I think to change these cultural things is very difficult. Having said this, with imaging and total body imaging, if a lesion doesn't change over 3 months, over 6 months, over a year, over 2 years, in God's sake, then this lesion has to be biologically benign, even if there are some dermoscopic criteria of an incisional melanoma or superficial melanoma. The recent data in Australia, Christine, we had last year 17,000 invasive melanoma, but 29,000 incisional melanoma. Can you imagine? I can just tell you also, based on my personal experience, my patients who have an incisional melanoma, they are as anxious and concerned as if they would have an invasive melanoma. And then if I tell them, please don't worry, an incisional melanoma is basically 100 or let's say 99%, they think, yeah, Peter is just kind. He just wants to tell me that I shouldn't worry. They are still worried.
Yes.
So this communication is a very difficult issue, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And this is therefore so important, and obviously public health people see it in a different way than clinician.
I completely agree with you, and melanoma in situ, but also we know in dermatology, for example, basal cell carcinoma, which I don't really think is overdiagnosed necessarily because it's histologically pretty straightforward. Basal cell carcinoma doesn't really harm patients in terms of metastasis. Certain cancers are more slow growing and indolent. So just because melanoma in situ does do well doesn't mean that it's not cancer. It's just hard because we don't have great biomarkers of prognosis, like which ones, when I look at a slide, which ones are really going to not do well versus even a thinly invasive melanoma.
Exactly. I think it's fair to say, as you mentioned, Christine, we are not yet there.
Yeah. Definitely an area that needs to be worked on. And I thank you for your research in that. We're going to move on now to talk about skin color, the Fitzpatrick scale, and something called the ITA measurement, which is a mathematical formula, a way to actually measure skin color, differences in skin color. And Peter's done a lot of work in that. Can you talk about that?
Thank you. It's actually a topic which we have discussed internally quite a lot. We think that the Fitzpatrick skin typing has not been developed with the goal to be a cancer risk factor, right? It was developed for the specific purpose of predicting reactivity of white skin to psoralene ultraviolet treatment. By Fitzpatrick, he was a German dermatologist in Harvard. And in its original form, it is just type 1 to 4 and not even 5 and 6. This was included later to represent people of Asian and African heritage. But I even have here a problem, Christine, because East Asians very often have a whiter skin than I have. And I make often these sort of jokes. I'm not sure if they're politically correct, but my collaborator, she is originally from China. She has a whiter skin than I. Yep. And what are we calling her Fitzpatrick type? And then this question, how do you tan? You know that in some, particularly in some Asian cultures, people are not going into the sun. Yeah.
Yep.
They're simply not going, right? You see them walking with the umbrella. In the sun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even between Fitzpatrick 2 and 3, it's a lot of crossover. Some of them don't know because they don't go into the sun. So I'm a strong critique of this. At the end of the day, the measurement of the skin tone, of the skin color, is the better way. The question is how you do this. There are these colorimeters from a few companies on the market, which then provide you exact data. There is this concept of the individual typology angle, which basically can be extracted out of images. I think it's a way of the future, because then you can still say the skin classification, if you call it now tone or color, from very light, light, intermediate, tan, brown, and dark. Yeah?
Yeah. Yep.
And then if we look at both of us, we may realize that my skin is probably intermediate and yours light. Yeah.
Yes.
But yep. It takes out this ethnicity and racial dimension of this. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think this is one way to go. The 3D, the total body imaging, or the total body imaging is so relevant. It will allow you to automatically diagnose and extract the RTA. Yeah. Then, of course, is the issue where you measure it. Quite complicated for a variety of reasons. In our research now, we are measuring 10 different body sites with a standard colorimeter. And then obviously we are extracting the RTA and see to correlate it. This concept of Fitzpatrick to think Asian is 5 and 6 is completely wrong.
There's a range.
No one would think that someone from South Italy is not a Caucasian. But in God's sake, they may be very tan skin. We have to change our way of thinking. At the end of the day, skin color classification can be done quite well just on certain body areas.
Based on your experience, what do you think, what would you guess correlates the best with skin cancer risk? The color of skin from the buttocks or the armpit area? Or is maybe it's the contrast between that color and their forearm? Suggesting
look,
how much
I,
the damage they've done.
That's a very good question. I think the color alone gives you just one direction. The difference, this delta between constitutional and facultative, is a very important marker for keratinocyte cancer. Yeah? I'm not so convinced that this is a relevant marker for melanoma. I really think for melanoma comes in definitely the number of moles. And then, of course, also hair color, eye color. The other aspect I think in the future will be of uppermost relevance is the polygenic risk score. It works already quite well in breast cancer. It works quite well in cardiovascular risk. A lot of research is happening in polygenic risk score and mental health.
That's cool. I've been seeing transplant patients for the last couple of years, and I've been wondering through seeing them, not every very light-skinned patient with transplant gets skin cancer, but some of them do get quite a few. And I've been wondering exactly how to risk stratify them a little bit more.
Yeah, I think there are some preliminary works around the polygenic risk score in organ transplant recipients. It's just recently has been published. But I agree with your observation. Not everyone who has a transplant and is in a high immune suppression medication gets skin cancer. Certainly, sun exposure, chronic sun damage, plays a role. I think a lot of work needs to be done. I'm very confident that we are able to tackle this.
Yes, very exciting. Thank you for all that work you're doing. So you went from Austria to Australia. Can you talk about emotional intelligence and the role that it played in your career?
Emotional intelligence plays a huge role, one of the most important aspects in the career of a medical person. For people who have a job where you have to deal with people, right? Patients, allied health workers, colleagues, researchers, this plays a major role. Some people get emotional intelligence, obviously from their parents, from their teachers, yeah? And then, of course, you one has to develop it over the years.
Yes. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, Christina, I just enjoyed talking with you. And obviously, thank you for selecting topics which are very close to my heart, the overdiagnosis issues, the issue of Fitzpatrick. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Yes, I did as well. Thank you very much.